Are you ready, Alabama?
Hello? What, who's there? What's going on?
You're listening to Hour Number 2 in the Doghouse.
Whatever's happening here, just knock it off.
Call the big dog now at 866-485-9867.
These kids are weird, man. They're weird.
Live from the Big Dog Production Studios.
How you doing?
It's the Tom Abraham Show.
That might be listed in Revelations as the cause for the apocalypse.
Here he is, the head of the household, the Big Dog.
You're the smartest guy I've ever met.
Tom Abraham.
You want me to do this crap?
I guess I'm on here. Am I on? Can somebody respond?
You know, while my little friend Erky Shea was ripping on the NHL awards and who the presenters would be, how come he didn't mention Marcel Dion, Mario Lemieux, Ted Lindsay, Mark Messier, Dennis Potman, Bernie Parent, guy by the name of Wayne Gretzky? Why didn't he mention those? I don't understand. I mean, look, I'll be honest with you. I don't know who Joey Manganiello is. I sure as hell don't know who the alt-rock band Arkells are. But, I mean, the presenters aren't exactly, you know, a list of C-listers.
The Arkells?
Is that what they're called? The Arkells.
I don't know. Yeah. That kind of sounds like, remember Arky's or Cole's Wikipedia page? It kind of sounds like one of Arky's siblings.
It's A-R-K-E-L-L-S. It's an alt-rock. You know who knows this stuff? Is Brent Sobolewski, because he's tragically hip when it comes to music. So maybe he knows. He, of course, covers the NFL for the Bleacher Report, and he jumps in with us now. Sobo, do you know who the Arkells are, or am I?
No, I'm not going to come on here and lie and act like I do. I'm usually speaking, when it comes to modern bands, I don't know. Like, let me give you an example. I know a lot of people were lamenting the death of Prodigy in the hip-hop community yesterday, and the only Prodigy I knew was the one that was a fire starter from Germany a few years ago.
Yeah, I hear you, man. All right, before we get to the NFL stuff, I know you know you're a Cleveland guy, you're a Cavs guy, and you like to follow the Cavaliers a little bit there. And you know, I understand that the Warriors are the 900-pound gorilla. I understand that they're dynastic in the way that the Patriots have been and the Yankees in the past, the Celtics, of the 60s and really throughout their history. I get all of that. But, I retweeted Clay Travis's take that the time to trade LeBron is right now for the Cavaliers because there's no way that they can beat the Warriors. Should everybody just like lay down now for the Warriors? I mean, do we not do anything? Do we just all just disband the rest of the league and just let the Warriors roll to it? I mean, they can't have an injury. They can't be beaten if a couple of things are done to the roster of the Cavs or the Spurs or whatever. I don't understand this mentality that it's so futile that the Cleveland Cavaliers should trade LeBron James.
Well, the issue with LeBron is twofold. First of all, when you look at him, he essentially has complete control. We have reports that there's been a pseudo-revolt behind the scenes when it comes to how Dan Gilbert's dealt with the GM situation. We saw LeBron come out publicly and basically support the previous GM. And when that happens, you know there's things going on. There was also the report that they're trying to have Jimmy Butler avoid coming to Cleveland. So these are things that are problematic. On top of that, LeBron can opt out after next year as well. So now you have to wonder if he's going to continue his career in Cleveland. All this forms this maelstrom of how they're doing everything wrong at the moment. When reality is, yes, the Golden State Warriors are very good. Yes, they're one of the most dominant franchises we've seen based on how they're currently constructed. But moving forward, there is a potential to beat them. Let's not forget the San Antonio Spurs pushed them in the playoffs. The Cavs have the ability to push them. They have to attack them differently. But this isn't like the Cavs were so devoid of talent they didn't have an opportunity like 2 years ago when they really had to rebuild the entire roster. So I look at it as kind of being going a little overboard for a fan base and a team that's gotten a little spoiled when all they need to do is maybe add a piece here or there to really compete with the Warriors.
Yeah, Brent Sobolewski with us. All right, let's shift gears, talk a little NFL. The Titans' Eric Decker deal kind of, you know, I mean, in some cases maybe that flies under the radar. But, you know, Eric Decker is not an old guy. I mean, he's a guy that's been in the league 7 years, had tremendous years with, you know, when he had a quarterback that he was working with Peyton Manning, and didn't have great years with the Jets because they don't have a quarterback. You know, he had a pretty good year with Fitzgerald, I guess, 1 year. But, you know, when you look at this guy and the deal that he got, the $4 million basically, when you add in the game, you know, per game bonuses, which he'll get automatically, $250,000 bonus if he has 4 touchdowns, he'll get that. $125,000 for every 10 receptions starting at 30. I would think that he would get that. The yardage bonuses and so on. Is he a needle mover at all, or is this a guy just gonna show up and, you know, and just play out you know, his final season as a Titan?
I wouldn't clarify him as a needle mover, but what I see him as is a integral piece to how they're building their wide receiver core, and we've seen the Titans overhaul wide receiver in general this year, starting with the 5th overall pick, Corey Davis. You have Tywan Taylor as well. Now you bring in a veteran like Decker, who still has plenty left in the tank. One of the best compliments I can give him is actually, and people will view as a negative, is that he's not a speed receiver, so you don't expect him at 30 years old to still be running by people. He's got a good route runner. He has the size, a really good red zone target. And on top of it, you can place him in the slot and have that big body to become a security blanket for Marcus Mariota. When you start rolling all these pieces together, now you're getting a complete wide receiver core. I always look at it the way Brian Billick looks describes a wide receiver core. You want a basketball team at that position. You want them having diverse skill sets, different sizes, different abilities, and that's what the Tennessee Titans are now building. And it gives an opportunity to really fit within the offense to expand on the exotic smash mouth and have legitimate threats of wide receiver, because Decker, if fully healthy, is still a competent wide receiver and one that can produce and be that target, reliable target for Marcus Mariota.
Who's your favorite in the AFC South?
I'm leaning towards the Titans at this juncture, especially when we don't know the entire situation with the Colts. I'm not entirely sold on the Houston Texans quarterback situation. And even though Jacksonville has paid a lot and included a lot of talent in their roster, it has to come together and gel. At least what we've seen with the Titans, 9-7 last year, saw a major improvement. You have that franchise quarterback, even though he's coming off an injury as well. I just really like the way they're building towards a certain type of philosophy and really completing their roster this offseason. So they're the team right now that I would give the nod to.
You just posted a piece at Bleacher Report, the NFL's most overhyped stars. You're not going to make a lot of friends in my neck of the woods down here. By every time this story comes up, there's a big picture of Cam Newton on there. The dude 2 years ago was ridiculous, right? I mean, come on. He was the MVP, did everything. I don't know that he's – I don't know. Do you view him as overhyped really that much at this point in time?
I do, and let's clarify that. It's written as overhyped, not overrated, not talented. I give him plenty of credit in the piece of the abilities that he does have, but I've never viewed him as a complete quarterback behind center, and his ability to play from the pocket is erratic at best. And one of the things that highlights that is the fact he's a 58% career passer, which is rather low when you consider what guys like Tom Brady, when you see even like a Sam Bradford Ross completing over 71% last year. You don't have that precision passer behind center that wins consistently at the NFL level. And I understand the game is changing and we're putting better athletes, and he is such a dynamic athlete overall that he creates things with the offense. But the fact of the matter is you still win from the pocket. And if he can't do consistently at any consistent level, because I believe he's really forsaken his his technique, his mechanics over multiple years without really perfecting them, that we won't ever see the full potential from Cam Newton. Even when he won the MVP, he had a 58% completion percentage, or bordering on 59. It's not like he went out there and was out of his mind completing high 60%. This is someone, he's a power thrower. He's not a precision passer. And as such, when it comes to his ability as a quarterback, I do believe it's overhyped to a degree.
I wonder if that's so who he'll always be. I mean, he's never going to be a 65% thrower. Or is the system partly to blame in that? Is he in a type of system? I've often thought, too, sometimes that maybe they haven't put the enough attention on that offensive line, thinking that, wow, we got this big strapping, 6'5", 260-pound quarterback. You know, we don't have to spend as much time making sure that we take care of him as you would maybe some other quarterbacks.
Well, that's more the Bruce Arians approach and the way he's going through his career. But I think we'll see this year with the way that they're changing some of the things they're going to do within the offense to see if he can be more of that precise passer. Because when you bring in Christian McCaffrey and you bring in Curtis Samuel, now you're going to start relying more heavily on bubble screens and swing passes and angle routes out of the backfield, things where you have to need timing and top accuracy to hit these guys out of the backfield because they're going to be featured parts of the offense. So before you had the big targets like Kelvin Benjamin or the speedster like Teddy Ginn, just chuck it up and let him run under it. Now let's see how he operates when he hits that back foot, has to hit this down the seam or where linebacker's not in the zone. And that's where I'm really curious to see how he continues to progress. We're going into year 7, and we haven't seen a gigantic jump in his level of play from that aspect. He was better than expected, but he's still not quite to the level that would put him at an elite with an Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady or Drew Brees or anyone among those quarterback sensations, because I'm curious to see how they're going to cater this offense, not only to his talents, but to the talent they brought in.
Brent Sobolewski with us from the Bleacher Report. Just to prove that you're an equal opportunity offender, you also put Marcell Dareus out of Alabama on there with the Buffalo Bills. I would agree with that one. Amari Cooper, though, I mean, come on, man. I mean, Cooper, yeah, he said he led all players with 22 drops over the last two seasons. I remember when Jerry Rice was dropping passes early on in his career. They say he's come in fantastic shape. Amari Cooper, man, I think he's right about on the edge of becoming, in that top three group of receivers in the entire NFL.
Again, and we have to clarify this, that the two you mentioned were in my quote-unquote honorable mention. I mean, they were just on the cusp of being named most overhyped. Now, with Darius, he can actually be absolutely dominant. His skill set is unquestioned, but he has to be on the field and he has to take the game seriously, which he doesn't always do, hence why he was mentioned in the first place. But Cooper, what's interesting about him, it's not only the drops, but when you watch Oakland and you watch what over the last 2 years, when they needed a key play, when they needed something in the red zone or on third down, it wasn't Cooper that they were generally targeting. Derek Carr, who's going to be a $25 million man here real soon per year, was targeting Michael Crabtree. He's the more reliable target, at least now based on being the veteran who can run the routes, who can be that guy that you can consistently count on. Now we'll see Cooper develop. And now I'm looking at it purely where they are right now, not where they're going. So what he had did the past two seasons plays into how I feel he's been rated, simply because we expected him to be such a dynamic force the moment he stepped in the NFL. And a couple of the missteps, a little bit of the miscues kind of led him to being slightly overhyped based on what we expected of him.
Yeah, you had Eddie Lacy on your list. Now, as not an honorable mention, but actually on the list of overhyped. Now, I think you have to put a caveat with that. If it was 240-pound Eddie Lacy or 235-pound Eddie Lacy, which I think he would be an absolute beast at that weight, I think that's one Eddie Lacy. And then I think the other Eddie Lacy is the 265, 270-pound Eddie Lacy. I think there's two different guys there because, man, there were times when he looked awfully, awfully good.
Absolutely. And two-time 1,100-yard rusher in Green Bay's first two seasons there. You saw his ability to be a lead back, but we cannot simply overlook the weight issues because the Seattle Seahawks aren't. It was last week, or I believe June 12th, that they had the first weight clause where he had to come in under 250 pounds, and the next one he's got to be lower than 245 or 240. So they know and they understand the same thing you do, Tom, that he is a completely different back when he has his weight down, when he's playing healthy, and he's committed. And the fact that he came in under a one-year contract and the prove-it deal shows where he currently stands in the NFL. These players – that had issues in their previous stops, whether it's suspensions or in Eddie Lacy's case also being benched at one point in his career, you have to prove it now. You can't just walk in and get big paydays based on your previous production. And all those concerns add him to the list because you have to see him become that guy again. I'm not going to stand back and give him credit for something he has yet to prove.
Carson Wentz on the list as well. I mean, man, has anybody got more love off the first three games of his NFL career? And that's that, you know, first impressions, our lasting impressions deal. But, you know, he looked like a world beater, and then everybody kind of looked away. And then if you look at it at the end of the year, you might say, you know, but he's a rookie. I mean, come on, rookie quarterbacks, hype, not overrated, but again, hyped is a different thing. Yeah, they do. They talk about him like he's a top five quarterback in the league. Not quite there yet. He has that, but he still could be that guy.
Yeah, bingo. It's potential. And what does potential mean? It just means you haven't done it yet. And that's what we're waiting for with Carson Wentz. You see his ability, his natural skill set, 6'5", almost 240 pounds. He runs well. He played in a pro-style system coming to the league, picked it up relatively quickly with the Philadelphia Eagles. Yet, as you rightly pointed out, it looked great to begin with. But then it fell apart. And a lot of that, much like Newton, has to do with mechanics. He had footwork that he's continually worked on, a long release that he wants to shorten. Now, these are things that he's emphasized this offseason and really where you want to see him improve. And basically where I'm coming from, exactly where what you stated, Tom. Already dubbing someone a franchise quarterback long before you get to the point where he plays like that consistently. We have not seen that. It's year two. We'll see him progress, and eventually we can potentially anoint him a franchise quarterback. Just don't do it yet because you're jumping the gun.
So did the NFL Network jump the gun when they put Dak Prescott higher on their top 100 player list than Tony Romo has ever been in his career? I mean, only Derek Carr, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Matt Ryan, and then Dak Prescott in terms of their quarterback ratings. Never, never has Tony Romo reached the height that Dak Prescott reached in his first year. Is that a little bit too glossy for him, or are you okay with it?
Well, it's a little over the top because in certain situations you have to factor in the offensive line, the running game, what was actually expected of him, how they catered the offense to his skill set. But in reality, the season he put together was as good as we've ever seen from a rookie quarterback. And I'll give him absolute credit for outperforming expectations. And that's what this is all about. That was all what I wrote about today. It's all based around subjective, the way they're viewed throughout the league. And Dak Prescott coming in as a fourth-round pick blew everyone away. Whereas Carson Wentz, your number two overall, you better play on a more consistent basis. And the same thing would be with Jared Goff. But I think a lot of people have already buried him after being the number one overall pick. That doesn't mean any of them are going to be Hall of Fame quarterbacks or franchise quarterbacks. We have to give them time to see how they develop. It's just, in this case, they all fell upon expectations and what we saw them coming into their first year.
I find it very interesting that in college football, the general consensus is the biggest improvement for a quarterback is between his first year and his second year, and we'll have some cases to kind of follow that along this upcoming year where there were some freshman quarterbacks that did some really special things. But in the NFL, it seems like a lot of times a first-year quarterback, I mean, Rick Myra, rookie of the year, Vince Young, rookie of the year, and then they disappear, you know, off the face of the earth. In the case of Cam Newton, he ends up being an MVP in year four or five, but he was ridiculous his first year as well with all those touchdowns that he scored in the NFL and many others that we've seen like that. Why is it that it seems like in the NFL when you get to year two or three, sometimes these guys, Andrew Luck looked like a world beater and now he looks kind of average. Why is it that sometimes in the NFL guys either regress or stay the same into their second or third year?
Defensive adjustments. In a way, you have the smartest, brightest minds in football at the NFL level, being able to game plan on a week-by-week basis and do nothing but concentrate on how they can stop certain players. When you get to a point where you can exploit their potential weaknesses, once you discover what they are, then it falls onto the player to adapt into the change, much like a pitcher. Once they take away your best pitch or start hitting it, you better have a good number two. And in this case, we can point towards some of those you mentioned. Another one that popped in my mind, maybe because I'm from Ohio, was Derek Anderson, who was a Pro Bowler in 2007 that fell off the face of the planet as a starting quarterback. You see these guys They have the ability to succeed, but they're limited in certain degrees. And once the defenses figure you out what they can take, what they need to take away for you to fail, that's why you see the differentiations from college, because in college you don't have that same amount of time to prepare. You are on a limited basis hours-wise, and a lot of things are very simplified. So once you get to the point where the quarterbacks are comfortable within the offense, they can just start rolling. Whereas the defense, they get spread out. They can't rotate in their defensive linemen, you know, all the different sub-packages. Game is much faster and harder to adjust. In the NFL, these guys are adjusting every single play because they're so smart and understand the game so well. And I think that's why you see the differences between the two levels.
Always a pleasure, Brent Sobolewski. How's the little guy doing? Is he doing good?
Yeah, he's doing well. He had to go to his follow-up appointment today. And then he'll get another set of casts here in a few weeks. So I appreciate you asking. But he's doing very well. Mainly just a little bored right now because he wants to run around the house and he can't.
I hear you. Well, we'll keep him on our prayer list, and hopefully everything will be fine with him going forward. Sobo, we'll talk. Not next week. I'm off next week. I get my annual summer vacation next week. And so we'll get hooked up on the week following that.
Well, thanks, Tom. Enjoy the vacation, man.
All right, man. Thank you. But Kringleberry got loose. In the name of all that is holy, talking about the NBA this time of year in this area, it's like passing around a pork chop platter at a bar mitzvah. So glad that you did not stay on the LeBron thoughts for very long. Thank you. Well, you might want to change the channel, because coming up next is Bo Estes from NBA TV and NBA.com. Look, the draft is tomorrow. All right? There are trades everywhere going on. There's speculation of trades everywhere. The championship just ended. The football season, even though there's no offseason of college football, the football season is months away. We're talking football every single show. But still, we got to deal with it. Right, T-Mac? I mean, you can't just can't ignore the NBA, even though it's the off season. The draft is tomorrow, and there are trades going on all over the place. I think we have to deal with that.
The draft's coming up, like you said. Trades, free agency starts July 1st. There's an NBA award show next week.
Yeah,
there's all kinds of NBA stuff.
The award shows I could care less about. I can give a rat's butt about the award shows, but you got all the trades coming. He said he didn't know that the draft was tomorrow. And that's what the deal is. I mean, the draft is tomorrow, which is causing all of these trades. So, you know, it's a topic this week. The NHL draft will not be a topic, you know, because we don't know those players. Hell, we don't know the half of the players being drafted in the NBA because of the way, the deal is now. And then we'll move on. We didn't talk about the baseball draft because, again, we don't know the draft in high school kids. And, you know, Kyle Wright being drafted because he's a kid, North Alabama kid who went to Vanderbilt. You know, we talk about Kyle Wright and he went to the Braves, you know, but that's not as much a topic. But the NBA draft with the trades that are being made, yeah, we're going to deal with it. All right, let's get a break. When we come back, the aforementioned Bo Estes is next right here on the Tom Abraham Show. 7:30 and 103.9. Yeah.
Wipe your paws. It's time to enter the doghouse. Remember waiting for the school bus. Jenny Clayton was my first crush.
So I said to McSelfie, it's the first day of summer. He says, nobody cares. It's National Selfie Day. So I posted one on Twitter. At Tom Abraham Sean, threw you up a little selfie from the studio. And that was hard to do, man. I think I can count the selfies I've taken on like one hand. And I don't know how you do that. I mean, I had the thing on the camera, you know, reverse, so it's like looking at me, and how do you hold the camera, how do you hold the phone up by the very bottom of the phone and then press the thing? I had to do it with two hands. I mean, I didn't even know how to do that. It was very difficult I think I hurt something. I might have strained a shoulder or something trying to do the selfie thing. I had to take like four pictures to get one because I was taking pictures of the wall and taking pictures of the computer and the microphones and. And I had to hold it with two hands to do a selfie.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh, me. It's not easy. One hand. How do you do it one-handed? I mean, the button that you push to make the picture happen on the i7 phone is on the bottom. So I'm trying to hold the thing up, and I'm, you know, tipping it down towards me to look at me.
If you're selfie, if you're selfie challenged, you have to do the embarrassing thing and go out and get a selfie stick. So
I don't want a selfie stick. Sounds like a disease or some selfie stick. Yeah, Bo Estes joins us now. It's, you know, we got a draft coming up. We got people being traded. We got people speculating about trades. And Bo is, of course, NBA TV, NBA.com. Bo, welcome back. How are you, man?
Good. I enjoyed hopping in for the grumpy old men hour here at your show, Tom.
Did I sound like get off my lawn guy? Is that what that was?
Yeah. I sort of enjoyed it. I've been at the back doctor today, so I could relate.
I think I hurt myself trying to take a selfie. I think something might have hurt me a little bit. I don't know.
Selfie injuries.
Yes, I got a selfie injury. Has anybody been traded yet today? I mean, is there any more moves going on? Because it seems like everybody in NBA is being traded for Jimmy Butler. I think something like that. I don't know, but what's going on?
I'm sort of worried that while we're on the phone, Steph Curry will be traded for LeBron James. But in the last hour, I haven't seen anything new. The Dwight Howard news last night was interesting. Interesting. I just think this is the most unpredictable year, and there's so much talent in this draft that, boy, it's going to be a fascinating watch.
The Dwight Howard thing, I mean, boy, it didn't take long for his hometown team to turn the tables on him. You know, that was kind of interesting, and I don't know who's the winner in that deal. You're right there in Atlanta. What did you think of that?
Well, I mean, I think if you want to talk about winning basketball games next year, maybe that doesn't help Atlanta. But I think everybody in the NBA and every team in the NBA is looking at things through the idea of, can we beat the Golden State Warriors next year? Can we beat the Cleveland Cavaliers next year? And if not, then you're sort of pushing ahead a year or two beyond that in your development plan. And I think that's where the Hawks found themselves. And, you know, with a new GM in place, from the Golden State lineage, I think that they're sort of looking to the future and ways to sort of cut salary and you know, acquire new talent and develop more around like guys like Dennis Schroeder and players like that.
Yeah, and, you know, and of course, the Paul George news kind of kicked off the week, and immediately that speculation started coming down as to, well, would the Lakers go ahead and just make the move now for him? And, you know, what do you suspect? I mean, by the time we get to the end of tomorrow night, will Paul George still be a Pacer? Can he even play that final season with the Pacers, saying that this is my last year with you guys?
Well, you know, that's tough because who leaked that information? It sounds like his agency more than anybody else leaked that information. But Paul Millsap played in Atlanta this year under the final year of his free agency contract. Ideally, you know, the Hawks would like to be a player in bringing him back, I imagine. He's such a talented guy. He hasn't made a public statement that he wants to go. But Paul George going to L.A. is not a secret. You know, he would love to be there. And I think there are just not a lot of talents quite like Paul George in the NBA. Guys that can instantly raise the level of your game. The Lakers are going to have a lot of young talent through the draft the last few years, but Paul George immediately pushes them up on the cusp of a playoff team, if not even a tick farther than that, if they could get him. My understanding is that Indiana is in no rush to make a deal by the draft, so they may wait a little longer than that and see what's out there. And they may not serve the Lakers or the Clippers needs necessarily. I think Indiana obviously has to do what's best for them, and if keeping Paul George around another year, if they think it's best for them, if they think they can drive up the market by the trade deadline, perhaps they do that.
Bo Estes with us, NBA TV, NBA.com on the eve of the NBA draft. What will be your specific responsibilities tomorrow?
Tomorrow's a light night, honestly, for us, because it's not the highlight guys, it's not the studio guys as much, it's the analyst guys. I will be certainly involved on Twitter and active with the NBA.com and NBA TV community, but beyond that, we're not hosting anything. I may end up with some afternoon breaking news like I had the other day on NBA TV, but as far as just dead-on assignments, it's a lot of hands on deck with a lot of undefined roles right now. And then you'll have studio hosts with Matt Weiner and Vince Cellini hosting draft night coverage afterwards.
Yeah, I kind of stayed away from you for tomorrow because I thought maybe you'd be all covered up. So that kind of works out good as well. So you get to
It actually, strangely, my schedule differs from the busiest of nights in a weird way a lot of times, and tomorrow is an example of that. I'll be busier during summer league, frankly.
Yeah, I hear that. You call some of those games, don't you?
Sure.
Yeah, that's good stuff. All right, so obviously the big deal was the Boston Celtics trading the number one overall pick to the Philadelphia 76ers, where the 76ers will now bring in Markelle Fultz. They'll pair him up with Embiid and Simmons, and they can all be in the same hospital floor together, right? I mean, is this it now? Is this finally? I've seen people say this will be the most dynamic big three, the envy of the entire NBA, this young big three that they'll have, and I get all of that. But it's like nobody can get on the court with that team. They're like snake bitten. I don't understand. They're like the Cleveland Browns. They draft the Myles Garrett, and the guy breaks his ankle on the way to the press conference. They're crazy.
Well, the process has always been to me this. It's been first gear, and then it can't be second, then third, then fourth. It has to go from first gear to fourth or fifth gear in a hurry. And I think if you get Embiid on the court with a healthy Ben Simmons, who has apparently grown and is nearly 7 foot tall now, and a Markelle Fultz, and a guy that a lot of people are going to forget about is one of the leading contenders for the Rookie of the Year, Dario Saric. So they have four super talented guys that are young and ready to play ball. And if those guys can get on the court at the same time and produce as expected, they're going to make a leap, and they'll make a leap in a hurry. But as you mentioned, injuries have been a problem, and they're not afraid to shut guys down.
Yeah. And so now that leaves Boston. I think Boston has everybody's first-round pick for the next 2 years, right? I mean, they've – my gosh. I mean, Boston's just on the clock. They just pick whoever they want. What is stopping them from packaging up some of these picks to get Jimmy Butler? Because it seems like Butler would be a really good fit in Boston, unless I just don't understand the game.
Well, as we mentioned a minute ago, I think all of this has to be viewed with, can you beat Cleveland and Golden State now? Can you reasonably expect that? And I think Boston's starting to get in that zone. Boston's starting to get in the zone of at least, yes, we think we could imagine a way we could beat them. And adding Jimmy Butler certainly moves you up the ranks in a hurry. So I think, look, if they go as expected and get a small forward, that's the sort of default position. If they go and pick one of Jason Tatum, Josh Jackson, Jonathan Isaac, they'll be improved, and they'll be improved in a hurry. But I do expect them to make a free agency move. And one of the guys, the guy I always look at is Gordon Hayward, headed there in free agency. That wouldn't surprise me at all, and that would move them up in a hurry as well.
Of course, the move with Griffin in Cleveland has caused a lot of gnashing of teeth there. I'm seeing crazy things. I mean, Clay Travis wrote that this is the time now for the Cavs to trade LeBron James because there's no way that they could beat the Warriors. And I'm just sitting here as a student of sport. Yes, the Warriors are a dynasty. They probably should have won three in a row. I get all of that. But so were the Celtics and the Canadians and the Patriots and the Yankees in the 50s when they won seven World Series. Does everybody else just lay down then? I mean, the Cavs are still probably as close to anybody in terms of beating them. It doesn't seem to make sense that LeBron would want to be traded, or that he would leave next year. All of that other kind of stuff seems to make no sense. He's still in the best position, along with Kyrie Irving, to add a part or two or three and have them be the people to go after the Warriors and try and knock them down. And God forbid the Warriors have an injury. Everybody's going to be just laying at their feet. I don't get it.
Well, no, you talked about two things that are important there. The Cavs are the closest team to beating the Golden State Warriors. In the fourth quarter of Game 3, they had a double-digit lead. If they don't give that up, it's a 2-2 series going back to Golden State. And God knows what happens. The series is at least a lot closer than it appeared. Additionally, Golden State picks up one injury, and these teams are even or advantage Cleveland Cavaliers. So I see them staying right there. I don't know that it's time to cash in your chips. I don't know that it's time to cede the floor to the Golden State Warriors for 2 or 3 years or whatever you think it's going to be. I think LeBron is clearly still the best player in the NBA. Kevin Durant right on his heels, perhaps. But for me, LeBron going triple-double in the NBA Finals is something special. And if you build talent around him, and if you just improve and tweak in a couple of areas, for particularly defensively for me. Look, they scored 120 points in Game 5 in the NBA Finals and lost by 9. If you can pick up just a little bit of defense and slow Golden State down just a little bit, you're right there with them. So that's crazy to me, the idea of sort of shutting down this operation with LeBron James. Now, I don't think LeBron James was pleased with what went down with David Griffin. I'll say that. So, you know, Cleveland's been through this before, and there's probably some anxiety among fans there. But nonetheless, at least take this year and take another swing at it.
Answer our poll question. Who would you take in a 7-game series? This is a serious question. Who would you take in a 7-game series? The Golden State Warriors or an NBA All-Star team made up of the rest of the league? I mean, you know, just take the rest of the league and put together a team. Now, that would mean that you would have somehow Russell Westbrook in there with LeBron. I don't know, you know, who takes all the shots. Kyrie Irving, you know, whoever it is that you make up that team. But if it was the Warriors, the way they play together, versus an NBA All-Star team over 7 games, who would you take?
So two things with that. First thing, Golden State did not have a single first-team All-NBA selection this year. So you could just take the first-team All-NBA squad and go out there and see what you got. So Kawhi Leonard, Anthony Davis, LeBron James, James Harden, and Russell Westbrook. Now, those five played a season together. I think they'd take down Golden State pretty handily. If you just said, here you go, guys, Golden State's played together all year long, you've got, you know, 48 hours to prepare for the series, it gets a little more interesting. But I do, you know, there's a limit to how good Golden State is. And if you give me the first team All-NBA squad, I feel pretty confident they'd take Golden State down.
Yeah, I was talking more in a, yeah, just throw them together and then they play a series. But yeah, you're right. If they played together, yeah, certainly if they were playing together over some period of time. And why is there never any talk about Russell Westbrook? I mean, because he's a guy, you know, he's an MVP kind of guy, and of course, James Harden. And, you know, we speculated about, you know, what would have happened if Harden and Westbrook and Durant could all coexisted at OKC. Would they be the Warriors right now? And but there's never any talk about those guys being involved in any kind of a blockbuster trade or anything like that. It seems like they're content to stay in Houston with Harden and in OKC with Westbrook and just take their chances.
Well, interestingly enough, it sounds like Houston's trying to make some moves around Harden to free up some space to land a major free agent. So it sounds like Patrick Beverley, Lou Williams, even Ryan Anderson, who I think is a key part for them, are on the trading block. But Russell Westbrook has been incredibly loyal to Oklahoma City, and I think he needs to be lauded for that. I mean, I think that's something worth a lot of credit. Kevin Durant's not going anywhere. He's very happy right now, and I think James Harden, in this role, in this new point guard role, loves where his game's at. So I don't see those guys wanting to move. I see those guys wanting to compete where they are. You know, I don't know how easy it would be to get talent to surround Russell Westbrook to push him into a championship conversation, but I don't think Houston's that far off. I really don't. I think Houston could be close enough, and if they could acquire somebody like a Paul Millsap who plays wonderful in high pick-and-roll basketball and could operate with James Harden, they get better and they get closer. Is it enough to beat Golden State on paper? Probably not, but it certainly gets you closer.
Yeah, I think people are still always going to put the governor on Houston because of Mike D'Antonio. I still think it comes into the mix there. It was like, yeah, he was great this year. He was a coach of the year candidate, all that kind of stuff. But still, you know, he is who he is, and, you know, they're not getting out of the second round.
Well, I think one thing you have to recognize is that he may have been ahead of the curve with his Phoenix Suns teams. The up and down, the shooting a lot of three-pointers, the high pick-and-roll stuff Steve Nash did with Amari Stoudemire, that's the way the NBA has gone. Now, the other thing you have to add in is that Golden State was either, you know, depending on how you judge it, the first or second best defensive team in the NBA, and D'Antoni's not famous for that. So I think, you know, if you incorporate defense into what his offense has done and the patterns it set for the NBA, you've got something. But Houston does have to play defense, and that's going to be something that's going to be watched closely.
So what are the chances that Lonzo Ball does not get picked by the Lakers and the world implodes? I mean, is there any chance? I mean, can they trade that? I mean, they're going to trade that pick? Or, I mean, is there any chance that they take anybody else other than Lonzo Ball?
Yes. Yes, there is. Here's what I'll say on that. I think, you know, based on the reports that I've heard, and I think David Aldridge has reported it pretty clearly, Magic Johnson's a big Lonzo Ball fan. There are others in the Lakers front office who are not as big a fan of Lonzo Ball. I think they're fans, but they may prefer to go in another direction. So who wins that discussion, who convinces whom in that argument, is something that it will be closely followed. Now, I'll also add this. Lonzo Ball does have the hometown factor. The last time I really can think of a comparable situation was in the NFL when the Texans had an opportunity to get Vince Young and they passed on him. This reminds me of that situation, and we'll see what becomes of Lonzo Ball. But there is certainly a scenario where he's not a Los Angeles Laker.
Hey, look, when the 49ers passed on Tom Brady, he cried. You know, I mean, it was that big a deal there. I just... In the juiciest scenario to make this thing the most watchable tomorrow, it's the Lakers send the number 2 pick overall to Indianapolis for Paul George, and Indianapolis picks Lonzo Ball, and then we get to watch the old man just completely freak out. Can you imagine that kid? Where are you going? We're going to Indianapolis, son. Oh, yeah, right, sure. He never, ever would even go there.
Well, I'll say this. I think that the Lakers sort of showed their hand when they moved D'Angelo Russell. I think so. Now they sort of need a point guard. So I think Lonzo Ball is likely going to go to the Lakers. But there's a lot of point guards in this draft, and you could trade down a bit and get a pick a little bit later and pick up a nice point guard. So I don't think it's an absolute certainty. But when you let go of D'Angelo Russell, you're sort of saying, hey, we're in the market for a point guard. And they got the number 2 pick. He's an L.A. star, and he plays a little bit like Magic Johnson, who's the new guy in charge. So, I think if you were an odds maker, you'd favor Lakers getting Lonzo.
If you're an odds maker, are the Celtics picking with that 3rd pick, and do they take a Josh Jackson there at that spot and improve that front line?
I think that's 50-50. I'm not sure if they're picking with that or if they're moving that pick. I think it's close. But, you know, look, there's 3 small forwards out there that they like a lot. And I think any of those 3 helps them pretty quickly, but a proven all-star helps them quickly as well, and maybe even quicker.
And finally, I got to have a Knicks take in there, because the last time my Knicks took a guy out of France, I think Vince Young jumped, or Vince Carter jumped over the guy, and he never played in the NBA. But having said that, I can't even believe that there's this discussion about trading Porzingis. They're talking about using the 8th pick overall in the first round on a kid out of France as a guard, possibly. What's going on in New York?
They need a point guard. They need a point guard, Tom. And that's the bottom line. I'll give you my opinion of trading Kristaps Porzingis. I saw the news come down yesterday, and I was with my 7-year-old nephew, who's a basketball freak. And James, my nephew, said to me, I wouldn't do that. And he was laughing. He said, I'd rather trade Derrick Rose. I think my 7-year-old nephew's take is the right take on that. My opinion is that it could have been some smoke from the New York Knicks. There's a lot of misdirection in these drafts. But Kristaps Porzingis is a superlative talent. He's the last guy Phil Jackson has drafted in New York. And honestly, there's a lot of criticism of Phil Jackson, but that pick right there has worked out wonderfully. You pair him with a point guard that is a young talent, and this is the most point guard rich draft I can ever remember, then you've got something. They're not picking near the top of the draft, so they're not going to get Fultz. They're not going to get Ball. They're likely not to get Fox. But there's still Dennis Smith, who's the most athletic guard in this draft, and he's got all the talent in the world. They're even looking at the kid Malik Monk and converting him to a point guard. Kalina out of France, I think, is a bit of a wild card, because you just don't have as much tape on him. But if the Knicks scouting department believes in him and they're so confident that they're willing to put their reputations on the line, then I think that says something about the talent that you're going to see from this kid.
As always, tremendous work, and I appreciate you, Bo. We'll get together a little bit down the road when the other news starts popping.
When more Knicks news breaks, I'll be back with you, Tom.
Can you believe a guy falling like Derrick Rose has fallen in terms of his star? I mean, you know, you're sitting there saying the Knicks need a point guard. They got Derrick Rose and spent all that money on him, and they need a point guard. You know, this all the injuries and everything else just finally caught up with him, and it's amazing how far his star has fallen.
Well, he didn't have the cleanest season off the court with them either, sort of departing and coming back to the team. It's time to build around a young point guard in New York, I think.
Yep, no question. All right, man, appreciate you.
Take care, Tom. See you, bud.
All right, thank you. All right, let's get a break. Tom Abraham Show, 730-1039.
Call 866-485-9867 to get your bark on. Here he is, the head of the household, the big dog, Tom Abraham.
Welcome back, Tom Abraham Show. If you want to go check out the BankstonMotorHomes.com website, and I'll be rolling a Bankston Motorhome into Hoover for SEC Media Days this year. At the website, they'll feature more pictures of the actual units that are in stock than any other RV dealer in the Southeast. In fact, they often have even more pictures for you, the customer, to check out than even the manufacturers. Now, there are salespeople there at Bankston. They understand buying an RV can be a big decision. It's a huge decision. They want to help you find the right RV for you and your family's lifestyle. Like, my wife and I have been talking about one for a while. We talk about a Class C, and then we talk about, well, you know, maybe we would want to have the ability to unhook and have a vehicle to drive around. Well, then we start talking about a travel trailer, you know, a fifth wheel, you know, go that way. And, you know, maybe that's the right thing. So, you know, these are the guys that you can talk to about this stuff. And a typical RV has over 200 components and systems from different manufacturers. Bankston's service technicians, they're hands-on, they're factory trained. They make sure that they're up to date with the current best practices for maintaining all the RVs that Bankston Motorhome sells. Learn more at BankstonMotorhomes.com. That's BankstonMotorhomes.com. All right, coming up next, Dominic Bramante. Oh, this will be fun. He's my brother from another mother. You might have remembered him as a Tennessee Valley Viper assistant. He's the head coach of the Duke City Gladiators in Albuquerque. Full-blooded Native American. Raised by an Italian family. It sounds like a cut line for a sitcom. He's next. Right here on 730-1039.